I mentioned our 1999 conference on fatherhood some years ago. 1999, that would be, wouldn't it? One of the speakers was Paul Vitz, an eminent psychologist. And in his article that was published, which I don't have in front of me, but he said words to the effect that masculinity needs to be upheld, encouraged, celebrated in the churches, not just in the NFL. So with that in mind, I mean, the whole topic of, you know, masculinity in sports, I mean, I think there's an important connection there. And it's something we don't often talk about at Touchstone conferences. But that's one of the reasons I was very happy to invite our next speaker to speak on Gird Up Your Loins. And he'll tell you what that's about. But I'm very happy to have with us Pat McCaskey. He is a Chicago Bears board member and the Bears vice president of special projects. I hope any Packer fans will forgive me for. Pat has been working for the Bears since 1974. He is the chairman of Sports Faith International, a nonprofit Chicago-based initiative dedicated to inspiring and transforming our culture through the world of sports. He's also the author of 5 books, among which is Bear With Me, A Family History of George Halas and the Chicago Bears. Please join me in welcoming Pat McCaskey.
Thank you. First Kings chapter 18, verse 46. But the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, who girded up his clothing and ran before Ahab as far as the approaches to Jezreel. Job chapter 38, verse 3. Gird up your loins now like a man. I will question you, and you will tell me the answers. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 17. But do you gird your loins, stand up and tell them all that I command you. Be not crushed on their account, as though I would leave you crushed before them. Luke chapter 12, verse 35. Gird your loins and light your lamps, and be like servants who await their master's return from a wedding, ready to open immediately when he comes and knocks. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 14. So stand fast with your loins girded in truth, clothed with righteousness as a breastplate, and your feet shod in readiness for the gospel of peace. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, live soberly, and set your hopes completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. The original meeting for what is now the National Football League took place on Friday, September 17, 1920, at Ralph Hayes Hupmobile Showroom in Canton, Ohio. That's why the Pro Football Hall of Fame is located there. There weren't enough chairs for Hay and Halas and the other founding fathers, so they sat on the fenders and the running boards of the cars. The Ten Commandments of Football. 1. Football is a wonderful game. There's blocking and tackling and much, much more. Be enthusiastic. 2. Weddings, births, and vacations should take place during the off seasons. 3. Remember the Hupmobile and the original meeting. 4. All previous games are preparation for the next one. 5. Obey the personal conduct policy. 6. Work for the good of the league. 7. Win championships with sportsmanship. 8. You shall not criticize the officials. 9. You shall not covet other teams' coaches or players. 10. Game times are tentative and subject to flexible scheduling. If the apostles had played football, they would have been a great team. Peter would have been the quarterback like Bill Wade. Andrew was Peter's brother. They would have been used to playing catch in the yard. Let's put Andrew at receiver. James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John were known as the sons of thunder. They would have been the running backs like Walter Payton and Matt Sui. We don't know much about Philip, Bartholomew, James, the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, and Simon the Cananean. So they would have been the linemen. Doubting Thomas will always be encouraging his teammates to play harder. Let's put him at linebacker like Bill George. Matthew, the tax collector, was used to dealing with money. Let's put him at end like George Halas. Matthias, who replaced Judas, would have been the kicker. Paul would have been a writer and a speaker like me. He wrote a lot of letters, even though the Corinthians were the only ones who ever wrote back. Wherever he spoke, there was either a revival or a riot. What did William Shakespeare's father say to William Shakespeare? Make plays. My grandfather, George Halas, started the Chicago Bears in 1920. He played on the team for 10 years. He coached the team for 40 years. He was the owner of the team for 62 years until he died in 1983 at the age of 88. He left the team to his family. I started going to Bears games when I was 5. My brothers and I sat on an army blanket next to the Bears bench while my grandfather coached. My grandfather once said to an official, "No man is completely worthless. You can always serve as a horrible example." I started going to Bears training camps when I was 7. George Blanda taught us how to kick. Bill George taught us how to play linebacker. Bill Wade taught us how to play quarterback. When my grandfather coached the Bears had to start training camp with the Halas Mile. That's how I got interested in running. As busy as he was, he knew the value of daily exercise. His motivational slogan was, "Never go to bed a loser." When Grandpa received the Sword of Loyola in 1979, he said, "60 years ago, I offered my heart and my helmet to the Lord. My heart is still beating, and my helmet still fits. I pray the divine coach finds me worthy to be on his first team." The last 5 years of Grandpa's life, his grandchildren took him out to dinner on his birthday. On Wednesday, February 2nd, 1983, his 88th birthday, we should have known that something was amiss because he told us that he did not swear anymore. He also said, "May the good Lord grant all of you as long and as wonderful a life as I have had." Before the Bears play a game, mass and chapel service are available in the team hotel. We try to get the Pope because we think our games are important. We offer $100 and 2 tickets. Chuck Simpson said he probably doesn't know who to bring. True or false? Martin Luther King Jr. played quarterback for Morehouse College. True. True or false, his team was constantly penalized for delay of game because he kept making speeches in the huddle. False. When my father was a boy, he came home from grade school one day for lunch. His great-grandfather asked, "What did you learn in school today, young man?" My father replied, "Nothing, sir." His great-grandfather said, "Oh, nothing. We must never have that. Fetch the Longfellow." So that day, before my father got lunch, he learned that lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. My father obeyed the law of gravity. He considered it a privilege to help his father in the garden. He never talked back to his mother. My father chose my mother. He renounced Satan and all his works and all his empty promises. For the first 6 years of my parents' marriage, I was not here. I only know the legend. 3 wise men from the East, Burt Bell, Bill Lennox, and Art Rooney, followed a bright star until they found my father at the University of Pennsylvania Theater. They approved of him, much to the despair of Chief Papa Bear. My mother's Indian name was Laughing Girl. My father put my mother on a donkey, and they fled to Baltimore, and they got married. In lieu of money, they gave the donkey to the priest. More than 10 months after the wedding, my brother Mike was born in Pennsylvania. He was wrapped in an army blanket and laid in an open footlocker. Across the Atlantic Ocean, Hitler had captured much of Europe. My father had heard that Hitler's ultimate plan was the capture of Ireland. So my father defeated Hitler with a sling and 5 smooth stones. My father's cousin, Pat McCaskey, was killed on a landing in Italy. Upon my father's return to Pennsylvania, he met my brother Tim, who cried and cried at the introduction. My sister Ellen was also born there. When my mother was pregnant with me, the family moved to Illinois. When I was 7 months in my mother's womb, she received the blessing for expectant mothers. Father Bird, the pastor of St. Mary's in Des Plaines, did the honors. I was born April 30th, 1949, at 12:46 a.m. at St. Francis Hospital in Evanston. Dr. Levan presided. Cook County Clerk Richard J. Daly signed the birth certificate. My father was a salesman for Mann-Hallis Incorporated. My mother was listed on the birth certificate, too. When my parents brought me home from the hospital, my mother wrote, "The lilacs in the backyard were in beautiful full bloom." On May 22nd, Grandpa George Hallis and Aunt Flossie McCaskey, my father's cousin's mother, were my godparents at my baptism. Father Bird presided. My sisters Mary and Ann, and my brothers Ned, George, Rich, Brian, and Joe were also born in Illinois. My father's father was a genius with things electrical and mechanical. He could fix anything. He taught me how to fix a flat bike tire. He built a shower in our basement, wooden sidings to our laundry tubs, cabinets and closets, a brick sandbox attached to our garage, a swing set, and a dog pen. My grandfather also taught me how to play catcher. He said that after a batter swung and missed a pitch, I should show the batter the ball and say to him, "This is it, this little round thing. This is what you're trying to hit." When I was watching a football game on television one day, he said, "They ought to give each team a ball, then they wouldn't fight over it." When my brothers and sisters and I came home from grade school, our first question was, "Where's Mom?" My grandfather tried to protect my mother and said, "Leave your mother alone. She's taking a well-deserved nap." When that response didn't work, he said, "She went down to the Philadelphia Naval Yard to dedicate a ship." My mother gave crew cuts to my brothers and me. Then my grandfather would rub our heads and say, "I like the way you comb your hair." My grandfather liked to have cold milk at dinner, so he was the last one to have his poured. Sometimes we forgot. Then he would hold his glass up to the light and say, "I wonder what I'm supposed to do with this. I guess I'll use it to look at stars tonight." On April 20th, 1959, I received the sacrament of confirmation. My grandfather was my sponsor. When my grandfather was visiting us in Des Plaines, he often wrote to my grandmother, Kit, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The mailbox was a half block away. He took turns saying to his grandchildren, "If you can mail this and get back in 2 minutes, I'll give you a quarter." Regardless of how quickly each of us delivered the mail and ran back to him, he looked at his watch and said, "You just missed." At dinner one evening when I was about 10, I did an impersonation of my grandfather impersonating Groucho Marx. I said, "After dinner, I think I'll play with my toolkit." My father attended many, many Father's Club meetings. He encouraged us to forsake alcohol. He encouraged our teachers to keep trying. In one note, he wrote, "My son only got a D last quarter in your course. I think you're a better teacher than that." So I'm going to give you another chance to prove yourself. My father said, "I can't do everything." He said, "In your prayers, remember the bears." He taught us the value of education. He instilled in us an appreciation of flowers. He taught us the importance of tying plastic bags into knots so the kids in the garbage dumps wouldn't suffocate themselves. He always kept a song in his heart, which he passed on to us. He took us fishing. He put smiley faces on our report cards. He sang in public. He built fires in the fireplace. He built bridges among family members. He allowed his sons to steal his clothes. He was the most decent human being in the National Football League. He let us wheelbarrow truckloads of stone, sand, and good black earth. He led us in the rosary. He made sure we always had a dog. He taught us that ending a sentence with a preposition was unheard of. He taught us how to behave during Mass. He taught us it's important to have a good garden and someone else to work in it. He showed us how to run the family like an army. He let us wish him a happy birthday because presents were too expensive. My father reminded us that God said, honor your father and your mother. My father avoided death for as long as possible. On November 9th, 1969, the Bears played the Pittsburgh Steelers at Wrigley Field. The Bears won 38-7. It was the Bears' only victory that season. My father was so excited that he had a nosebleed that wouldn't stop. He had to be taken to Holy Family Hospital for heart trouble. The doctors worked on him, and he heard one doctor say, he's gone. My father tried to tell him, keep trying, but he couldn't. Finally, they got him going again. For my 33rd birthday, I received permission to date. After 9 months of prayer, I met Gretchen Wagle through mutual friends. 4 months later, we looked at a house that was for sale. After the tour, Gretchen asked me, why are you looking for a house? I crossed my mouth with the back of my right hand and muttered, in case you want to get married. She accepted my invitation. As I stood before Father Nevins and Pastor Gordon, I thought, this is how it's going to be on the Day of Judgment. I better be a loving husband. After I got married, there was no longer any need for the Bears cheerleaders. You might have read about my wife in Proverbs 31. Verses 10 through 31 describe the ideal wife. Her only fault is that she tells me how to drive. After she apologizes to me, I say, that's all right, that's okay, we'll stay married anyway. I sort of have two wives, Gretchen and the navigation lady. Exactly 9 months after the Bears won Super Bowl 20, our son, Ed, was born. He reported 2 days early. We felt that showed good initiative. 3 years later, our son Tom was born. 2 years after Tom, our son Jim was born. Our sons were named after my father and his brothers in the same birth order. If we had been blessed with a daughter, her name would have been Grace. For several years, I didn't want to coach my sons on their sports teams because I coached them a lot at home. It's still a game of courtesy and grammar. I wanted them to get a different perspective. Besides, every time they did something right in a game, I'd want to call time out and shellack the ball. When my sons were in 7th and 8th grade, I was one of their football coaches. I was an expert for a long time, then I became a coach. Before most games, I said to my sons, good luck, do your best, because God doesn't grade on a curve. If you do your best, you're a winner, regardless of the score. My goal as a parent was to show interest without meddling. Any playing time was a great opportunity. I took notes at my son's games. My approach was, you were given this much playing time, and this is what you did with it. I provided accountability and encouragement. I showed my notes to my sons, but I didn't bother their coaches. Taking notes at the games helped keep me quiet. then I didn't have as much time to coach or officiate from the stands. When my sons played, I thought their coaches were great. I left the swing set up on purpose because I was hoping for grandchildren. I was mocked and scorned. Ed met Elizabeth at a pro-life dinner. After they had been dating for a month, Ed said to her, "Just so you know, if I ever have a son, he'll be named after my father." In 2013, they got married. In 2015, their daughter Grace was born. In 2016, their son, Pat, was born. In 2018, their daughter, Charlotte, was born. I'm a man of vision. Christopher Columbus, the Wright brothers, Pat McCaskey. When my son's age was in single digits, I asked him if I could please call him Jim. He asked, "Can I have a dog?" James applied to 7 colleges. My plan for him was to have a semester at each college. For the 8th semester, I would homeschool him and he would be valedictorian. After he had earned a master's degree, and after he had become a certified public accountant, he ran away from home. My plan for my sons was that if they did not become priests, they would get married and have children, and we would all live together in the same house like the Waltons. Children don't always do what their parents want them to do. And yet children are a blessing. They grow up and they get married. If they are blessed with children, we hope and trust that the parents will provide accountability and encouragement for the children. In preparation for marrying Emily, Jim developed physically, socially, culturally, and spiritually. I am grateful to Jim for being my son. I am grateful to Emily for accepting Jim's invitation. What do George Burns, Tony Eslin, Jim Kushner, and I have in common? We think it's important to have a big finish. The Bears have an outreach to Chicago Public Schools. The players and I visit schools and we talk about the importance of education and having a healthy lifestyle. The program for boys is called BAM, Becoming a Man. We have a PIES check-in, physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. Here's my check-in. Physically, I'm working out 6 days a week. Even God took a day off. Workouts are recess. Intellectually, I'm writing my 6th book, Worthwhile Struggle. Here's the dedication page. Committee work is a worthwhile struggle. Family is a worthwhile struggle. Love is a worthwhile struggle. Providing respectful comic relief is a worthwhile struggle. Writing books is a worthwhile struggle. Emotionally, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for listening to me. This is better than talking to myself. Spiritually, I go to church and Bible study and have daily devotions. I'm checking in. Towards the end of the sessions, I present a rewrite of Rudyard Kipling's If poem. My poem is When. Like the original, there are 11 syllables in a line, then 10, 11, then 10 throughout the poem. When you strive and thrive for excellence rather than rationalize mediocrity, and can realize you are no better than anyone else, but certainly no worse, well, you know the sun will appear after an eclipse, and know that apathy is the opposite of love and not hate, and not be self-centered so you listen to others. When you can dream positively and think actively so that you can assist friends rather than handicap them, and be grateful to the good God for your natural gifts. When you can have people take you earnestly through a feeling of duty and a sense of humor, and yet be unique and make your presence felt without being obnoxious. When you can maintain a belief in love and laughter rather than loneliness and tears. When you stand in love rather than fall in it, and choose love gladly rather than madly. When you can need someone because you love her, rather than love someone since you need her. When you have double cartwheels with only her and have universal brotherly love. When foes goad you into prudence rather than stupefy you into resignation. When you are strong with faith in humanity rather than aggressive from fear of it. When you maintain a belief in the last flower and the wild flag, and also play the trumpet of the swan to catch the white deer, then you will be, bam, becoming a man. Thank you for listening. This is better than talking to myself. It is great to be with you. Have a Hall of Fame day.